I'm Cape.
And I'm Drew.
We're just two former student athletes who understand the game.
Not just on the court.
But in life.
At the end of the day, we just want to help.
Today's athletes and former just trying to find their way.
It's bigger than sports.
This is the Cape and Drew Podcast, the real TikTok. What's up, everybody? I'm Cape.
I'm Drew, and today we are back, episode 21, Law and Order. And so with everything going on right now, we thought it would just be great. Like, what if we could interview a real cop, right? You know, to get their perspective, their insight on things. And today we're fortunate to have Detective Brandon Riley from the Durham Police Department, my frat brother, my guy. How you doing today, man?
All right. How's everyone doing?
Doing good, man. We appreciate you coming on, man. We know, you know, it was a lot to get you on here. We had a lot to just boxes to check, but we're glad you made it. And so, the first question we always ask people is, especially going on now, is like, how you doing with everything going on as far as like COVID-19 stuff?
Yeah, man. Well, first of all, it's an honor, man, and privilege to come on you guys' show. I really appreciate you thinking about me coming on. First and foremost, but right now with COVID, man, I'm just kind of at the house, you know, with the family. Being in investigations, I don't necessarily have to go in. I do a lot of right now, I'm doing a lot of work from home, but normally I'm in the office. So I'm here with my family and the kids, running all crazy over the place, driving me insane. But you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world. So hopefully sooner or later the office will open back up and I'll be able to, you know, get in get in there, get a break.
One thing we always ask, like, yo, what's been the best thing of this quarantine and what's been the worst?
For me, time has been the best. Because, and I say all that, you know, I was talking about my kids just a few seconds ago, but
having being able to spend more time
with them has been help, and my wife has been great. We've been able to hang out a little more, you know, learn even more about each other. Because, you know, when you get caught up in the hustle and bustle of the day, you know, you get into a routine. But we've all, I think, been out of our routine for the last, you know, two or three months. So, you know, I've really enjoyed, you know, just hanging with the kids all day, you know, finding crazy stuff to do. I think we've all gotten pretty creative in the last two or three months, man. But I really enjoyed it. I think the worst part, though, I think is that I've seen is for them, you know, because they don't understand. They're starting to understand COVID, but you know, having a 6-year-old and 13-year-old, you know, they would rather be with their friends. They'd rather be outside, going different places, and you know, telling them, hey, we can't do that, you know, right now. You can't do this, can't do that. You know, it's a lot of can't right now for them. You know, I'm kind of been a homebody. So for me, you give me my Netflix, sports, yep, and the ESPN, I'm good to go. But y'all know with kids, that ain't gonna work. It's only so much, Netflix and Nickelodeon, you know, next to go around. So, you know, so I find it hard for them. And of course, they really enjoy school. So they miss their friends, you know, things of that nature. So I feel really bad for them. You know, so hopefully things can get back on the right track here soon.
Man, I could always tell when my wife's getting annoyed. But I just be like, all right, come on, Danny, let's come upstairs. Yeah. And I can tell when my son getting bored, he'll start looking around stuff in the house. He know he ain't supposed to touch. He'll walk over to it and just knock it over.
Right. You're like, yo, we got to go. Like, we got to go outside. We got to do something. Yeah, yeah. And it's crazy you mentioned that, you know, it's almost a tag team. It's always a tag team. But like you said, you can tell, like, all right, they're getting on the wife's nerves. And, you know, I want a happy household. So, you know, because they don't get in trouble, I get in trouble. So, you know, and I want to rest easy at night. So, you know, I try to take that off the shoulders, just, you know, like we all do. So,
you ain't been over there eating the kids' snacks like me and Drew was eating the kids' snacks for 13 months.
Man, I'm going to be honest. I buy my own snacks, but they eat my stuff, you know. That's the thing. So I don't want to say it too loud, my hiding spot, but you know, I got my own hiding spots where I keep all my stuff, man, because I bought a good snacks, you know. I bought a good snack. So, you know, they like, ooh, the only stuff that I really like that they like is the fruit snacks, you know, but I'm gonna be honest, by time, they demolish them. I don't even get a chance, you know. So I let them have theirs as long as they don't touch mine. You know, I got those vanilla Oreos. They've been a problem.
Hey, I had to literally tell my wife, I said, yo, stop buying them, man. They like, you know, you get the thins.
Yeah.
Like, thins ain't as bad as the double stuffed joints.
Right.
But it's bad if you're eating the whole row.
Whole row, bro. Whole row. Done. I'm like, yo, I gotta do better, yo. This is crazy. So,
What made you want to become a police officer? And how long have you worked in law enforcement? And what is your current role with law enforcement? And I think this is a good question to kind of touch on because, you know, I know that being a police officer, especially right now, isn't necessarily the sexy job, right? You know, there's a bad narrative out there. You know, not for all, but you know, just with given everything going on. So what made you want to be a police officer?
Well, honestly, man, mine goes back to my childhood. My father was actually in law enforcement. He's actually a preacher now, pastoring his own church down in Charlotte. But originally he was a police officer. I was young, you know, he was my superhero. I watched him, you know, come in, you know, gun badge, worked hard, you know what I mean? I was like, man, that's so cool. You know, I want to do that. But it wasn't just him, you know. I thought, you know, he tells me all the war stories and stuff like that. And of course, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, you're like, wow, you're sitting there like, you know, right out of bushy tail. But it also, he worked in one of the harder parts in Charlotte at the time. And the community really respected him, you know, in what he did, and he was more so. And I know we're in the advancement of community policing now, but I felt like he was already doing that, you know, back then. And we'd be out and about, and people would come up to him and knew him. He'd be out of uniform, you know. And people would come up to him and, hey, what's going on? Like, it was like really cool. And I was like, man, like he was. I felt like he was just a superhero, like the mayor, like everything, all kind of, you know. And like it was really cool to see. And you know, so that's what opened my eyes to it originally. And fast forward, I've been doing this for about 13 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, 13 years. And I've been in criminal investigation division for the last 5, 6 years. So, you know, and working with the, I first started in doing district investigations. Now I'm actually in a specialized unit doing armed robberies. So okay. I deal with all armed robberies, bank robberies, home invasions, anything violent, doing that. So pretty busy, you know.
So, I know you're busy out of Durham, but
yeah, you know.
Crazy because we was in school together, right? And so I remember when you graduated and you know, we just having a good time. So I had no idea you was about to be a cop until like, I think maybe a year later, they was like, yeah, Officer Riley. I was like, yo, we didn't even know that. I mean, I knew your major was criminal justice, but I didn't know you was about to be a cop.
Yeah, man. You know, and that's the thing. I was just being, you know, we all in college and college is college, you know? So, you know, we had some good times, you know, but I think at the end of the day, we still have to, you know, we all have goals.
Yeah.
You know, so, and it's crazy, even in college, you know, we had some good times, but I feel like, you know, just me, you know, myself and you as well, you know, we had a good time, but we still remain balanced, you know, kept our goal oriented, you know what I mean? Achieving in the field of human endeavor, you know.
Yeah. So,
but, you know, I believe, I think that was the main thing for us. You know, we knew why we were there, should I say, you know, and I was always told, you know, play hard, you know, study hard, you know what I'm saying?
And be safe, man. You know, just get home at night. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
By the grace of God, I always tell me and Drew, always like, by the grace of God, man, we still here.
Still here, man.
All praise to the Most High. But real quick, off something you said that was so important is that how your father was basically respected and he had like that, you know, that image in the community. And my mother would always tell me growing up, because my grandfather was a preacher, and she would tell me back in the day how things were so different, man, how like being an educator or being a police officer, being a preacher, being were the respectable jobs, right? Like it didn't matter about the pay. You know, I think the pay gets it gets caught out there, and the narrative is if you're a teacher or if you're a cop, you ain't making no money, so the respect isn't there. Not about the job you do, like firefighters, whatever the case may be. And right. So he would always say that the people in the community, especially the Black community, those were the heroes, the people that were serving the community in those roles. And now, amazing how now, you know, even without everything that's going on, it's like you kind of look at a cop and people are like, yeah, we respect what you do, but, you know, the tunnel vision, how much money you make, that's all people care about. They're not thinking about the purpose and the service. And so that's cool that you mentioned that, because my mother would say the same thing. Like back in the day, if you were in education, if you were a police officer, if you were the preacher, you were like LeBron James. You was like the guy in the community. So it's just crazy how things have shifted a little bit.
Yeah.
Crazy thing is, like, when you mentioned about your pops, right? I didn't know your pops was a cop, but the way you talk about how he was like revered, you know, that's the same type of, you know, same reputation as you have now.
Right.
That's B. Riley. Like, yo, like, it's like, oh, B's here. Like, that's just like, that's just like that. Yeah. That's the exact type of reputation that you have. It ain't like, oh, this, you know, he coming.
Right. It's kind of crazy. Yeah, because, you know, everybody, obviously, even when I go home, they're like, man, you act just like your dad, man. You act just like your dad, you know. He's always go, hey, what's going on? You know, boom, moving, shaking, you know. One of the, you know, nicest guys, talk to everybody, you know, that kind of deal, man. It's just, and a lot of that is just, I think he got that from law enforcement. But, of course, being a preacher, you know, they talk to everybody, you know. So I just think that, you know, mixing in with everything. I kind of got an old soul too, man. So, you know, a lot of cats don't really act, you know, not as forthcoming, you know, as I am when it comes to that, man. So,
I hate to make it, you know, take this turn down this road, man, but what were your thoughts, you know, say when you saw like the George Floyd situation kind of play out?
Man, I'm actually glad you asked that, but honestly, I was, as a law enforcement officer, I was very surprised, to a certain extent, you know, very surprised. But as a Black man, I was extremely angry, you know what I mean? Because before any blue, I'm Black first, and I was hurt. You know, I was confused, to be honest with you. You know, I'm wearing blue, you know, supposed to be protecting and serving and this, and but I don't want to call him my counterpart, but some guy who's supposed to be upholding the same thing that I am is, you know, as we saw, you know, has knee on, you know, a man's neck for close to 9 minutes. Like, I mean, that's not nowhere in the right mind. Is that, you know, right at all? So, you know what I mean? So it was, and then dealing with that, like, you know, I thought, is this something I even want to do anymore? You know what I mean? Do I want to represent this anymore? You know, so it was a lot of sleepless nights, honestly, to be perfectly honest with you, just you know, going back and forth with myself. I you know, thanks for the support of my family. I had a lot of friends contacting me and things of that nature, because for a Black man in law enforcement, at like during this time, it's extremely difficult, you know, for us, you know, because we feel the same way the Black community does, to some degree, but you know, we also have a job to do when it comes to law enforcement and things like that too. So it was pretty difficult.
Yeah, I you know, we spoke on how we felt when it first happened, but it's interesting you said, you know, I'm Black before I'm blue. And, you know, I think that, you know, because I always say, of course, not all police officers are bad, right? And then you got some police officers of color that are out here doing, are treating black people just as bad as white officers, right?
Right.
And so
right.
It's not necessarily, of course, racism is going on out here, but I think it's more so of a power trip with some officers. And, you know, them just feeling like, you know, some guys, man, this is just my opinion. You don't have to speak on it. You know, some guys are just, you know, guys with badges and a firearm that are really insecure. And maybe they're the guys that back in high school, middle school, whatever, they didn't have the juice. And they figured the best way to get the juice is to get the badge and the guns, because now they have a license to be the quote, air quotes, so people can't see me, but the bully, right. You know what I mean? And
right,
so,
right.
You know, that's just my take on it, man. It's to your point, it was just so unfortunate, but I love what you say. I'm black before I'm blue. I mean, that's, you know, had to feel it.
Yeah. I mean, it's nothing. I felt it, you know, ultimately I was enraged, you know, I was pretty upset, you know, to be honest with you. You know, so I, even now, you know, I still, you know, dealing with it. And this is, of course, as you guys know, this isn't the first time. You know, so I've been in it, for me personally, I felt this way before. Yeah. You know what I mean? And probably won't be the last time I feel this way. Right. And it's unfortunate, but, you know, probably won't be the last. But, you know, I have to concentrate on what I can bring to the community,
you know,
and things of that nature to, you know, rebuild that trust in the community, how they had back in the day.
You right.
Know, that's what we have to get back to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's what's up. That's great. Yeah. Can you talk about some of your experiences working in law enforcement, just to get a listener's idea of the risk that your job entails?
Yes, well, I hadn't been on the street in a while, but it it's still dangerous even for me as an investigator, but definitely when I was on the street, I mean, you're dealing with, you know, one of the most dangerous calls is a traffic stop. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times you don't know who you're pulling over. You're walking up to a door. You don't know, of course, what they have in the car, what they have in the hand, what kind of day they've had. So sometimes it's not even somebody who's bad, they just might got fired earlier that day, and you know, they might have be a CCW holder, you know what I mean? So like it's, and just having a bad day, and that happens, you know, and things can go south from there. Last thing somebody wants to be do is pulled over by the, you know, by the police, you know, in certain situations like that. With also domestic violence calls, those are some of the most dangerous calls, you know. They can turn on you like that. You know, we've all been into it probably with our wives at some point, probably not to that degree, but you know, you can definitely tell, you know, when guys are angry, women are angry at that point. You got people who are at that moment are probably the most upset they've probably been, and they expect you to come in here and fix it, you know? And, you know, so it can be pretty dangerous, as well as we get violent calls all the time. We respond to, of course, shots fired calls, and you know, I've been the calls where when I'm there, shots have been, you know, fired off, you know, things like that. And you know, it's armed robbery calls, burglary calls, you know, even a simple alarm call, man, is one of the most nerve-wracking calls to go on. You know, you don't know if somebody's in the house, you know, hope you're praying nobody's in this house, you know. You know, we get those, and there's been times where I've responded to calls and seen guys running out the back door, you know, and you know, they don't want to get caught that day, you know what I mean? So and that's where, you know, things can go south. So you know, every day you strap up and put it on, it's a, you know, you pray that you come home, but you know, there you just run that risk, and that's part of the job. That's what you sign up for, though.
swear people don't really be taking that into like hindsight, because I talked to one cop before and they were like, every situation that you go into, you have to plan for the worst, like the worst outcome, and then go from there. And so I'm like, man, how can I expect this guy to come here with a positive attitude? Like, I just feel like he's got to be mad. Like, you just have to have that mindset. Like, yo, I think I'm trying to go home, but also, like, that's just the survival. That's your first instinct of survival.
Survival, right.
They always say police are supposed to de-escalate situations. I think, like, they're trying to get home, too.
Right, right. And to that point, I believe, you know, there is a chance for you to de-escalate. To me, I call it, I say, use your time. I'm here for 12 hours. You know, you have time to, if you, sometimes stuff hits the fan quick, you don't have time to de-escalate. You got to do what you have to do. You got to do what you've, you know, been trained to do. But if you have time to de-escalate, use that time. You know, I don't believe in trying to deal with this quickly so I can get to the next call. No, I'm gonna be honest. Deal with this right now, and then you probably, hopefully you don't have to deal with it for the rest of the night, or even, you know, throughout, you know, reach somebody. That's a chance for you to reach somebody, chance for you to speak some wisdom. Of course, doing your job, but you're still able to, you know, come about and do what you need to do. You know, so that's what I take the time. I believe use that time to de-escalate situations. You know, it's an art that is not used as much anymore. You know, and that's just in the world. Everybody moving fast, yeah. Everything fast. Just, and I tell officers, young officers, slow down, just slow down. You know, talk to somebody. You know what I mean? So most times when people call the police, most times they just want to be heard. I mean, really, they have something on their chest. They're mad about something. They want to be heard. Nobody's listening. So they want you to listen. I've called the police because I want you to listen to me. and sometimes you literally just have to sit there and 30, I don't care if it takes 30, 45 to an hour. Listen, I have something good to say. And then you can, you know, say what you need to say. And, you know, if there's anything else that you can help them with, you help them. If not, you know, you just move on. So, again, it's just, you know, taking time. That's about it.
One thing I was always wondering, man, like, how do you keep that positive mindset? Like, okay, so, for instance, like, we know the Durham-Raleigh area really well. Like, so, I don't want to use this example. Like, not saying you have to do this, but how do you have the mindset, okay, I'm being positive, going to, like, an area like, you know, McDougal, when it's like, you know, no one wants to see you come. And so how do you just feel, what's up, everybody? Like, how do you keep going back then?
And I'm going to be honest, man. McDougal is one of my favorite places. McDougal Terrace is it's a housing development in Durham, public housing. So it's got some good people there, but you know, you do have high crime, you know, in the area, things of that nature. So you know, I enjoy going over there because, like I just said, it's some good people over there. And those, I feel like that's where we as law enforcement need to be. You know what I mean? They need to see us. The kids need to see us, you know, need to see me, you know, there. And we touch on it later, but that's how, you know, your community ends up trusting you, you know. I enjoy going over there. Like old school, I go and talk to the old lady sitting on her porch, you know, during, you know, while she's just, it's hot outside. She just out there watering her plants or something like that. That's your perfect time to go up in and talk to her. You find out a lot of stuff, you know, a lot of problems maybe going on. She's like, those boys over there are doing this and this and this, really miss so-and-so, you know, and you can just literally sit there and talk and they'll tell you, you know, everything. And just, you know, again, it's a good people, you know, out here, you know, that really likes it. When we're over there, thank y'all for coming out. We get actually more thank yous than people would believe, you know. Of course, we got to deal with our problems. But and I, like you said, I go up there, man, I wave in hands. Hey, I get out here. you know, I don't, my jumper may not be as wet as y'all's, but you know, look, I get out there and I shoot a couple hoops, you know what I mean? You know, the kids, they think I'm, you know, oh man, I'm giving them James Hardens and everything, man. So, you know, they think I'm great, you know, and it's just, I enjoy going out there, man, because it's really needed. But, you know, I have a great time speaking with the community. I enjoy it.
That's dope, man, because that'd be one of the main things I'd be worried about. I was like, man, all this stuff going on. Whew. Hey, I don't want to be right there right now, but it's good. I know you're not going over like, hey, y'all, the law is here. Everybody. I know you over there. What's up, man? Come on, man. You know you're supposed to be doing that, man.
Hey, Drew, he going over there like Trinity. You better call me.
Yeah.
Seriously. It's crazy. Like, but that's really how it goes. Like, I give out my number, like, Miss So-and-so, if y'all, you know, I go talk to, they got, look, investigator Ryan, my son, this and this and this, he's not doing right in school. And I say, I'll come over there and check him out, you know? And literally that's what I do. And I mean, that's why I'm, you know, gotta be in the community. I'm not just, you know, we're not just trying to take people to jail and, you know, do stuff like that. It's, you know, a lot of mentoring and, you know, things of that nature as well. You know, I go over there and I sit on people's couch and I talk to the sons and why they, you know, if they're in that kind of lifestyle, this is why you should be doing something different. You know what I mean? So, and a lot of, man, I get a lot of thank yous from these guys just for talking, taking the time to talk to them. And, you know, again, it goes back to what I said before, time is everything. So a lot of times they don't get that, you know, a black man like myself, just taking the time out to speak to them, you know, so it's.
And keeping it real with them, like, dude. Like the track you going on, man, you gonna do at least 10. You gonna at least do 10. You know what I mean?
Right.
And those real conversations, because they look like you. Y'all got the same skin tone. They're gonna be more receptive to the message. Like, dog, you might do 10 to 20, man, if you get caught. Like, what you doing up here?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, and I feel like I have to have those conversations before, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road, and now I really gotta, you know.
Yeah, because they of age now.
Right, now I gotta take you to jail, now I gotta, and stuff. And you know, it's happened. I mean, I've had these conversations with some of these, you know, young men and women, and even older people, and I still find them later on, you know, having to deal with them on the criminal side of things, you know, but even then, I'm still preaching the same thing, you know.
Did I tell you?
right. I'm like, but I have to, as Drew said, I keep that same positive vibe, positive energy. I'm like, hey, man, this is not good right now. Of course, you're in handcuffs. I really don't, you know, can't really say that it's good right now. But, you know, you have to, you know, I tell them, you know, stay strong, keep your faith, and, you know, once you deal with what you got to deal with, once you're out of it, you know, get back on the right track, you know, and I have to tell them, and a lot of them at that point, it snaps like, okay, you know, cause that's real when you're in those cuffs and in the back of a car. It's, you know, for some cats that have never done it, you know, that can be a rude awakening for you, you know.
Knock on wood. I ain't ever trying to have that feeling.
Me either, you know, But yeah, that's not a comfortable ride, man. It's not.
I never needed to be scared straight, man. That's one thing. I never needed that real life, you know, riding in the back seat of a car. I mean, I was afraid. I was afraid of my mama. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or my dad. Right. I remember seeing like scared straight, or seeing some parents like you were talking about, you know, calling a cop out there just to put the fear of Jesus in the kids.
Right.
And if that's what it takes. I mean, hey, you'd rather do it when they're, you know, not 16 or whatever the age is, 18, be putting them cold cuffs on them when they
get right, right, exactly. We get a lot of requests for that, you know. Can y'all come talk, you know? And I'm like, well, I'm not gonna scare them, you know. I want, because you want them to be able to, even with kids, we get a lot with the younger, like really like second, third, fourth grade, you know, the little ones. Like, it's, you know, wow. we really get it with.
That's that prison to pipeline though. Isn't that the prison mm-hmm. to pipeline?
Yeah, second grade, third grade.
Reading or the behavior or something
right.
like that.
Right, absolutely. So yeah. with that being said, that's why, you know, when I go there, you know, I tell them, you know, they, of course, their heads always drop. They're scared. I'm like, hold your head up, young man, you know, speak to me, you know. And I teach the same thing to my child, you know, hold your head up, you know, when someone's talking to you or when you're speaking to someone, you know. I said, be proud of yourself. And I more so instill confidence in them because, you know, a lot of times that's the reason why they, you know, why they're acting out or doing, you know. I give hugs. I'm like, hey, give me a hug, man. You know, cause sometimes that's little stuff
need
like
that. Love, yeah.
They need that. And yes. that's how you keep them from that is love. It's love. And it's, you know, I don't want to get all crazy and sentimental, but that's like, that's really it, you know.
That's real though.
Yeah, it's love.
Yeah.
You gotta get that.
I would imagine that the kids you're talking about, are, you know, maybe coming from just environments where they don't get a hug. Like their mom or dad is in the picture, or whoever's in the picture, they don't get a I love you, I care about you mm-hmm. consistent every single mm-hmm. day. Mm-hmm. And so to have somebody come in and just say that or give them a hug, I mean, you, dog, I can't compare. Like I worked in ISS and I, you know, I know this ain't about me, but I'm just saying, that when I worked at ISS, man, I just remember, this is the closest I can get to being a police officer. And so I remember working at ISS and dealing with these behavior problem kids, you know, and they were basically all black. And I think that was like I understood like somewhat of my purpose. Like I have right. a way of being sincere and being empathetic and spreading love, even in that environment. I mean, I was in a hut all day.
Right.
With the kids, and the right. teachers would just drop off their work and they would sit there. And I was saying this when I was like 275, 280. So I'm sitting there looking at them like Debo, right?
right.
But at the end of the day, I had a message for them. Like I would give them hugs and I'd be like, hey, you know, when you get out of here, I want to see you again. Now, I almost was too good because they would try to mess up. So they can come out there and
come back, right?
You know what I'm saying? But you know, to your point, I think that you gotta spread love to these young people, man, because they're not getting it. You know, especially with social media, and then right. if they don't have a good figure in their house, they'll go seek somebody that is paying them a little bit of attention, and that's okay. how they get down that wrong road
Absolutely.
And end up in cuffs. You know what I mean?
Right.
So,
right, absolutely.
I know we're going to thank you at the end, man, but I, you know, whatever that place is you're talking about you going to, man, I appreciate it. I know it's hard. I know it's great. Yeah. They love you over there, but still, I just, you know, we appreciate it, man. Try to keep us safe out here. Keep us safe out here, man. We appreciate it. I couldn't do it. But anyway, what has been your relationship with the community? I know you got a great relationship with the community, but mm-hmm. has it changed, you know, since the George Floyd incident?
No, not to some degree, a little bit, but not as much for me personally. I actually get a lot more questions. You know, people wanting to know, of course, how I feel about, you know, the situation because, maybe want to just get the law enforcement side, should I say. I get a lot of that. And I invite it, you know, I don't run from it. It's an honor to me that they would be able to trust me, you know, to really want to know my opinion, you know, on the matter. I haven't had too much, you know, difficulty in the community because I was doing the same things before. And that goes back again to, you know, trust and things like that. You know, every officer, most officers aren't like what we saw in, you know, Houston and different places. Just like anywhere else, you're gonna have those apples. I mean, that's bottom line. You know what I mean? Can't hide it. It just is what it is, you know. But for me, and I know a lot of officers here in Durham, the community does actually trust us, and white, black, green, yellow, everybody, you know. I don't know if we have a little swag about us, should I say, you know, and really we do, like, people really coming. You can talk to us. Like, you know, we're really out there in the community and doing things like that. And even for me personally, you know, I don't know, maybe because I don't wear a uniform every day. I drive, you know, an undercover car. Like, you know, when I get out.
You Mike Larry out here, man.
So, you know, so when I get out, it's not the same. You know, the eye doesn't see the same.
Right.
So, you know, they want to know, like, first of all, they're like, who is he? Who is he work for? Like, you know, so they're actually, you know, trying to see what I'm about.
If you got on the see me gear, you know,
a little different. Right. You know how I get down. So yeah, it's a little different. I think the trust that I've already established has stayed with me even through this, and I continue to, you know, build upon that. You know, I don't shy away from it. I go in, you know, do what we have to do. I still have the same positive attitude, because I feel like that's what's going to change, you know, people's thoughts on law enforcement. Are those encounters that they, you know, some people I know I've talked to, even some of my frat brothers have had terrible encounters with the police. They've called me, you know, personally, and we've discussed some things, you know. They say, I know you're cool, but the rest of, I get that all the time, but I tell them, you know, and I have to tell some of my counterparts too, you have to understand people's experiences, you know. It could be 3-4 experiences throughout their lifetime where they've all been bad. So at that point, it's like, I don't like the police. I can't stand the police, you know, and you have to respect that, you know, but it's also an opportunity for you to change that, you know, and you have to take that into account every time you go out and when you speak with the public and do things like that. You gotta always remember that this is your opportunity, you know, to change someone's outlook on law enforcement. So
that's dope, man. I gotta be honest, man, you dropped a lot of gems here, man, that I wouldn't expect a police officer to really give me, but it's one of those, like, dang, man, you just gotta be a good person, man. Just be good. Like,
it really is, man. It's just, I tell people, I mean, this is a hard job, but a lot of it, I say 75-80% of it is just being a good person, man. You know, I don't have to fight people. I don't have to, you know, most times I just talk to people. And I can only get, you know, we can only get what we want, you know, if we need that, or, you know, or de-escalate the situation, man. You know, it's, you know, sometimes you got to go get with it. But, you know, when you handle those times, I know how to handle that when it comes. But, you know, for the most part, man, it's just being a good person, man. You know, it's not that difficult.
So my mom, right, I was talking to my mom one day, right, and my mom's white, everybody, our listeners don't know. And so she was just like, are you okay? Everything about my mom, fine, right? And she's like, I know you know how to talk to people, okay. She's like, I just don't trust the police. I was like, what's wrong, mom? She's like, there was that one time that they arrested this guy outside of my house, and I just thought the police were being too rough with him. And I was like, well, what happened? Well, he had robbed somebody, and then they were chasing him. And I was like, well, mom, I felt like I was back in training. I was like, what, you want to show him the blacks on, throw the cuffs on? Like, I mean, so... That'd be like that when you say, like, they could be having the worst day and they don't want to get caught that day. It's right. Like, you expect them to, something happens, they're just gonna be like, you know what? Bam, I did it. Here, go ahead, take me away. Yeah. Like, I feel like they're ready for that. Like,
yeah.
So that kind of leads to that next question. Like, so how do you feel about when they say, yo, we should defund the police? We should just get rid of all of that. And as far as, like, I know what y'all see on TV, but hey, this is what y'all would really be missing out on, and like how this would really affect your day-to-day life.
right. Well, and that's been the question, as you all know, that's the question of the day for the last about month, you know, defund the police. And my thing is, right now, do we really know what that even looks like? You know, I don't know. Nobody really knows what defunding the police look like. And I'm in law enforcement. I'm like, what does that even mean? So that's one thing. And I look to, you know, it's more so politicians and city leaders, that need to look into that more. And not saying that they don't, you know, it's definitely something that I think should be brought to the table. Most definitely. You know, a lot of funds, a lot of different things go to different, you know, it's not just the police that, you know, that receive these funds. You know, we a lot of these funds go back into the community, you know, PAL leagues and, you know, things of that nature. We receive grants and things, but a lot of this stuff literally goes right back into serving the community, you know, what we are here to do, you know, to begin with. We form ice cream socials and, you know, things like that. So we've had times where officers, some out of their own pockets, but where we have budgets where we're able to say, hey, you know what? It's hot outside today. The kids are out. We're going to throw them a big party, pizza party, ice cream, you know, things like that. So you have to have money, you know, of course, to do that, you know, and that's where it goes back to. And that goes all the way back to, you know, we want them to, of course, trust the police, like we're here for you. Don't be afraid, you know, so it all goes hand in hand, you know, but like I said, defunding the police, it's going to be something that I'm actually interested to see what that really truly is and what that actually entails. Because I feel like it's going to be different for different places as well, you know, New York and, you know, that's a probably $1 billion department. So I don't know. You know what I mean? How they handle it versus smaller town like Durham. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's, you know, it's probably different for different places. So it's very interesting right now with defund the police.
And it's a tough job because I see on the news, like I see people that's in Raleigh that's outside the mayor's office, right? But I see people in Durham that's protesting outside like the Durham. So they got barricades set up. It's just like,
Yeah. I feel like, you know, they should have their voices heard, of course. I think anybody should, you know what I mean, during this time, you know, however they do it. Sometimes I don't necessarily agree with that, but, you know, but definitely having your voice heard is, you know, is imperative.
I know this wasn't on topic, but I think I was talking to you like a couple weeks ago. You was like, man, I'm getting ready to. I'm going out here now, so I'm on duty. And I was just thinking, like, yo, at what point, I know you go out there with that mindset, you got all your stuff on, right? But with COVID happening and everything, at what point does someone cross the line as far as, like, when they're protesting, you be like, all right, man, like, we can't do that. I want you to get your word out, but come on, man.
Right. So, luckily, man, here in Durham, we have, y'all probably seen, we really haven't had those issues.
Right.
And, you know, thanks to our chief, the way she, you know, looks at it, you know, as long as they're not tearing up anything and doing stuff like that, everybody has their right, you know, to say what they need to say. You know what I mean? I think it's great that, you know, people are protesting, marching. You know, I don't really agree with, you know, the breaking stuff and tearing up your own community, because it's your community. You know what I mean? Now, you know, I don't want to get to the folk who necessarily aren't from here, but if you notice the people, I want to call silent protesters, but peaceful protesters, you know, they're mainly your community folk. The folk who live there, Raleigh, Durham, you know, they have a voice and they really want, you know, to be heard, but they're doing it, you know, of course, the right way. And you know, you got some out of town folk who try to come in and mess that up, and it hurts the cause, and it hurts, you know, what's trying to be addressed, you know. And we've all seen that on the news where people have had to stop folk from tearing up their own community. So, you know, but here in Durham, you know, we haven't really had that, man. And I mean, for me personally, this isn't our first, you know, bout with having to do the protests and things like that. But when I'm, and I haven't had to do anything this time, but to your question, when I strap up and put on, man, it's, you know, you have to almost have a armadillo skin at that point, you know. I mean, that's real, because you don't, if they're going to, people going to talk, they're going to, you know, just know they're not talking about you, you know. You have to understand, you have to know that they're you know, they're talking to what you represent, you know. And some people are so, like, gung-ho that, you know, police over everybody, this or, you know, and then that's how you get in trouble. That's how things, you know, because they're going to people are going to poke. You know, that's what they're, some people are sent here to poke. You know,
that's real.
Yeah, they're sent here to poke on purpose. You know, and again, I don't. I keep a positive attitude, man. I you know, I've had some guys, you know, who were protesting. They, you know, ask me certain questions, man. Sit there and literally, and I don't mind having that conversation with, you know, with anyone. Again, like I was going back, I believe it's necessary, you know, to have those conversations. And I believe that, you know, people marching, you know, we've been marching for a long time, you know what I mean? And to get things done, you know, unfortunately. But, you know, I think if that's the way that, you know, people are going to do it, then peacefully, then most definitely.
And there's a difference between protesting and rioting. I think most that's definitely the thing. And you know, like me and Drew always talk about, like, I can't be on the front lines. I can't mm-hmm. be out there because it gets too heavy. I'm trying to just be, I got a 4-year-old, I got a wife. That's mm-hmm. not my battle. My battle is having conversations with my white colleagues at work, you know, getting right. them to understand and why I feel the way I feel or why my people feel the way they feel. Because sometimes mm-hmm. I had to wrap my mind around this. I mean, some situations, man, as crazy as it is, sometimes you're being where I work, a PWI, I'm sometimes the only black person that my colleagues consistently talk to.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And so right. my conversations after Ahmaud Arbery, after George Floyd, is our meetings that we do weekly turns into me very, very, not in a formal way, it just kind of happens. This is why we're upset. This is why people are rioting. This is why people are protesting. This is how I feel as a mm-hmm. runner when I'm, you know, why Ahmaud Arbery hits home for me, or why seeing that I'm scared for my son, because, I mean, it's a whole bunch of stuff that's the educational part that people need to understand or that's willing to learn. And I think the confusion is when people don't, when they just focus on the rioting and focus on black folks out there or whoever out there tearing stuff up, they miss the point. Like, why though? Like, what is the why? Like, if George Floyd was white and if and you, my friend Riley, were the mm-hmm. one with his knee on his neck, then mm-hmm. what?
Then what?
You know, mm-hmm. what's the difference?
Would I be here right now?
Be here with us right now.
Would you be here right now? And right. and I don't need you to provide any, you know, that's just a hypothetical, but that's just to get, you know, white people to understand that the rage, there's a reason for the rage, man. And it's been mm-hmm. it goes back for centuries. It goes right. back for a long time. And you know, I always tell my brother, deep dude, man, we're gonna, you know, incredible. He thinks a lot. And he says, mm-hmm. I asked him, I said, well, what if the black officers started going into the white communities and started harassing white kids in the suburbs? And Chris, mm-hmm. my brother, says they're not assigned to those communities, so it won't happen. I'm like, man, God knows. Don't press my theory like that, right? But and so I'm just thinking about, like, how can I paint the picture for my white friends and colleagues so that mm-hmm. they understand? They'll never really be able to feel and understand, but I mm-hmm. think it's part of our job to get them to think.
Right, right.
Because that's where the real growth happens anyway.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I feel like we're all soldiers in this. It's just, you know, but it's a different battle. You got some frontline guys,
yeah.
that's what they do.
That's
you know, that's good, as long, you know, that's where they feel their niche, you know, is.
Right. And we need them.
Need that. That's why I said we're all soldiers on the same team. So the thing is, but we need you as well, you know, where you're at. Same thing with Drew, same thing with myself, you know. And because that's what I started thinking, going back to those earlier questions, was, you know, me thinking like, man, do I even want to do this, you know, anymore? But then I had to think that, okay, this is actually your opportunity to step forward, to have you have that seat at the table, you know.
We always talk about that. Get a seat at the table.
Yes, we have. I have this seat at the table. You know, I'm able to, you know, say, hey, this is why, you know, this person felt this way. This is why, you know, this is how we as officers feel, you know, black officers feel, you know, and different things like that. And honestly, we've had some very good conversations at work, and you know, I've talked to some guys who sometimes opening their eyes, you know, like, wow, didn't know. But like you just said, you have those conversations through all of our careers. But those are the again, we're all soldiers in this particular battle, and you place people, and it's crazy how God just placed people, you know, where they need to be to still achieve the same goal. You know what I mean? Yes. So, you know, that just goes up in different avenues and things like that. So I think we still have to continue to push that fight wherever we may be.
Absolutely, man. So, and you kind of talked about this throughout our conversation, but can you help the listeners and communities understand the police, that police have families as well, police have bad days, police aren't perfect, but at the end of the day, you want everyone to make it home safe without incident?
Yeah, I think what the first thing that people have to understand is we're human beings, you know, that's the bottom line. And all of us being human beings, we know how that goes. When I strap up, my pant leg goes on the same way yours does in the morning, you know. And it is a struggle. I mess up, you know, I do. Might not say the right thing, you know what I mean? Now, am I held to a higher standard? Yes. And that sometimes can be stressful, you know, as well. But, and we go home and, or we want to go home, we deal with the situations at work. They can sometimes be, you know, very difficult situations, very stressful times at work during a 12-hour shift. Your adrenaline, you're up and down. You're mentally, about 12 hours is done, you're done. You know, but it's just, and I want people to remember that, like, you know, 30 minutes ago, I just saw a baby die. You know, and I hate to get that drastic, but you know, but you come
over. It just happened in Atlanta. It just happened. So
right. And I mean, you might have somebody literally die in your arm, but 30 minutes later I gotta go really mad that this dog is gone. You expect me to give you, you know, that courtesy. And it's tough. Like, so we as officers, you know, we have to work on that as well. And but I just want people to know that, hey, we're human. Like, you know, I'm hurting. I literally just lost somebody. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. I just saw it. Mentally, I'm not really even here right now, you know, but I still have to deal with your stuff. So then, you know, and I say a barking dog, but it could be anything. It could be domestic violence or not something else. So it's a stressful job, you know, and, you know, we train for that and things of that nature. But sometimes, I mean, again, you're a human being, sometimes you cannot train for that. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it just hits you sometime. And so, as I say, we don't get the benefit of the doubt, but if the community could be patient, you know, with the and same thing with law enforcement, we need to be patient with the community when, you know, deal with the people, you know, when we get there, people are already mad, like, took forever, yo, took y'all 2 hours. Yeah, you know. So, you know, little do they know, like I said, we had another situation that took forever. You know, I'm sorry, you know, and all you can do is apologize. So, but I feel like to keep everybody at level base, so everybody goes home safe, you know, hey, just have patience, you know, let's deal with the situation, deal with how, you know, how we know how, and move on, you know what I mean? So I can go help, you know, the next person who actually, you know, really needs it as well. So, yeah.
Man. I remember just, you know, I'll see stuff on the news, right? And then I hit you up like, yo, man, you hear about this? He's like, man. And I just think like, dang, like, I know it's off top, but like, how do you walk in and you might see the worst situation ever, but still keep a level head? Like, that's what kind of like just mindset does that take? Because I just feel like, man, if I see something, I might throw up. So I'm just thinking right. Like, you got to be like, okay. This is, so what kind of like focus does that take,
man? And that's why I was gonna say it goes back to that mental stability, man. It takes so much focus, you know what I mean, and to literally go through it, and you almost you don't have time to process it right then and there. Like, stuff is boom, 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 it's moving. You don't really have time and at the moment. And also, and it's just maybe me being have so many years in, you almost become numb. And I hate to say it to it, but, you know, I see it over and over and over. And, like, you know, you almost become legit just numb to that. And I don't like that personally, because when you become numb to stuff, that means you don't care as much, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like it should hurt a little bit, you know what I mean? Because that keeps you true. That keeps you, you know, keeps you human. You know, you don't want to become a robot, you know. Yeah. When you become a robot, that's when bad stuff happens. You know what I mean? And to good people or whoever else. So, you know, and that's how, when you become a robot, that's what happens when people don't get, you know, the community officer that you should be, you know, sitting there talking to, you know, whoever else for how long, you know, you like this again, don't know, you become a robot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and so
it becomes really, it messes you up, man. And so, like, you know, and then you come and unload it all on your family and your wife and your kids. And, like, you know, I don't know if it's still the same, but, you know, people in law enforcement and, you know, I think firefighters, stuff, people in that career, so the divorce rate is actually pretty high. It used to be, I don't know if it still is, but I remember one time it was. And that's, you know, you deal with it, you're talking about long hour shifts and things like that. And then you come home and I thank God for my wife and my kids. I literally force all that on her. And I don't know if it's me needing to release or what, but, you know, you just saw all this today. And it's like, boom, 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 you know, you just like, blah, like, let it out. Cause, you know, in law enforcement, it's almost like sub or military kind of thing. So we don't talk about it, you know, deal with it, go through it. And that's it. And that actually should change is, you know, one of the things that we should talk. And they offer stuff where you can talk, you know, to people, but, you know, you see stuff like that, you need to get it off your chest, you know, because you have a lot of, in law enforcement, you know, a lot of guys drink a lot and things like that, heavy, you know. Dealing, same thing with military.
Trying to cope with everything,
Cope, you know, same thing with military guys, you know, they cope with that kind of stuff. So I find, you know, you got to find a hobby, man. Like I said, my hobby, of course, are my babies. I love doing everything with them and, of course, my wife, you know. But I love doing everything with them. And like I said, you know, the running and, I go kayaking. I do kayak, anything, man, you know, hiking. I love it, but it just gets my mind, you know, clear and set, you know. So
I just wanted to kind of piggyback off something you just said about numbing and that kind of not being such a good thing. I would argue that it's depending on how you're numbing. Like, like for you, I think numbing, getting, you know, kind of helps you with, you know, getting that peace, right? Or trying to seek that peace. And so it's not turning into your robot. It's more like I have to protect my peace and my sanity. The other side of that is people numbing it. And, like, I don't care if this black dude dies. I don't care if there's a bunch of shootings in Chicago this weekend or Atlanta this weekend. I'm gonna numb myself to that. Like, instead of trying to come up with solutions, I think there's a difference. And so I can't imagine what's that like, though, for you and other officers to have days or weeks or months where there just wasn't any sunshine. You know what I mean? And hypothetically speaking, and that might do to your psyche. And I know it's crazy, but I think there's a difference, though. I think the guy that did what he did to George Floyd, murdered George Floyd, I think his numbness was different than somebody like you. The way you might numb your thought process. So that's just 2 cents.
Yeah, I'm gonna be honest. I can't even tell what was, you know, of course, right, going on.
Nobody knows, man. Nobody knows.
I mean, because that, I don't even know if that was numbing. I don't know what, you know what I mean?
I don't know if it was numbing this either.
That's just crazy.
That's just murder.
Basically, you know, I feel like when it comes, and why I say numbing is, you know, after after 13 years or even longer, I mean, we've had guys on, you know, of course, who've been doing this 25 years.
Yeah,
you know, and, you know, it's how I say nothing, but it's almost how they, you definitely stand the more of a chance of becoming that robot, you know.
The longer you stay on the floor.
The longer you're, you know what I mean? And I think that's what I was kind of leaning towards is more so, you know, your longevity makes you more of a robot than anything, you know. Of course, I've changed from the officer I was my first, second year, you know what I mean? Yeah. The gung-ho, let's do this, you know. Let's go, you know.
Buddy from training day, like Buddy from training day was, yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. We, as officers, everybody started there, you know what I mean? Yeah. And as time goes on, you know, I've seen some officers take turn for the worse. Some officers have become even better, you know, in to being promoted making actual change and things like that within the department. So I've seen both sides of it. You know, I the guy in, you know, was it in Minneapolis? I can't forget his name that quick. But with the whole George Floyd situation, like, I don't know. No, like you said, nobody really knows what he was going through.
Right.
Or if it was even numbing. Like, was he even numb to, or was he just, was just a jackass, basically, you know what I mean? Like, and y'all have to cut that out.
Was he just psycho? Was he just
numb?
He had a bad report. He had other situations. And that's amazing. Right. That's amazing how that comes out. After somebody does something egregious like that, or murder, y'all didn't do nothing before that. Before, because maybe if you did, George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, but others that have died at the hands of police officers would still be here. Instead of just saying we don't have a lot of people right now, we need as many people out there on the field as much as, you know what I mean. So
right.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, man, it's a lot, man. I think. You know, if I had my way, it'd be a lot more officers actually mandatory going to speak with, you know, psychiatric, you know, help throughout the career, you know, or even just, you know, therapy, man. You know what I mean? Because a lot of times that can help you throughout the day and somewhere where it might get hectic, you know, or might not, like, that can help. You know, instead of you being here all the time, right, stressed out, now you're here, you know, and you can, it's a lot easier to work through that, you know what I mean? So my wife's into social work and, you know, we've had great discussions, you know, about things like that. And I believe that, you know, they should be in the community, you know, which they are, not saying they are, but, you know, almost, you know, partnership with what we do, you know, because they're needed. You know, when they call us, they're expecting us to be social workers. Yeah. I've been a preacher. I've been a social worker. I've been an educator. I mean, I've literally, when I go out there, like, I got a bag. Which one am I going to be today? You know, all right, I'll be Pastor Riley today, you know, boom, boom, boom. And, you know, and you got to do it, or I'll be, you know, social worker Riley, and I don't have none of these, you know, backgrounds. But, you know, at the same time, you just have to, you have to give that to people, man. So I do think that, you know, so we won't have these sort of struggles and, you know, the killings of black men and or anybody for that matter. You know, we have to rely on each other and different career paths, you know, that can definitely assist, you know, with that. I work a lot in the schools, and as you know, in these schools, they have that, you know, they have, of course, you have a school resource officer, but you also, as you know, have counselors and social workers. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, it should be the same thing, you know, they have all these people for these children to, you know, to be able to go to if, you know, when they need it in different ways they can, you know, be helped. So I think, it's the same thing for the community, although they're not in school, but you know, we need
that same support.
Same support, you know, and not saying it's not out there, it definitely is, but I just think we on our side have to probably get more on the same page, you know, to do that and to, you know, okay, he needs a little long, we'll do this, or okay, let me refer, it'd be nice, you know, we do a lot of referrals actually in the police department, but hey, let's refer this person, we have to do better at that. This is what your resources are. Use your resources, you know. Hey, take you here, we can do this, we can do that. I can refer you here. I may not be able to help you right now, but this person can probably help you a little more, you know, and that you may save life that quick. So
that's,
you know,
a good point, man. That's
and
almost mandated, right? Like you got you gotta go, yo.
Right.
You've been wilding. I've been seeing you wilding out for the last couple of weeks, yo. You're on the edge. You need to go sit down.
Right. We need it, man. We all, like I tell people, I'm out on the street, and they understand. I say, hey, well, look, we all in this together. You know what I mean? I'm not originally from Durham, but you know, Durham holds a place in my heart, is where I became a man, basically. You know, so I said, look, I'm a part of this community like you are, you know what I mean? You know, we're all in this together. So, you know, if I can protect you and help you out and get you the resources, you know what I mean? That's why I'm here, you know? So, yeah.
You kind of touched on this earlier, so I'm going to skip over this question. This is kind of our last question. So, so being in law enforcement, right, do you ever find yourself having your own encounters with police? Like, let's say someone might not know you're a police officer, you're out of town somewhere. And then, you know, what would you recommend to, like, civilians as far as when it comes to interacting with the police?
That's a great question. I don't have, I used to when I was younger, actually have those encounters a little more, just cause I was young. I was, you know, I got in law enforcement, I think at 21. So, you know, I still, you know, live in my 20s. So, you know, flying down the road to the beach of, you know, those kind of situations. You know, I've had, you know, my tickets just like anybody else, you know, I'm mad about it. Like, well, you give me a ticket. You know, but, you know, at time change, you got a couple kids, got a car seat in the back with a bike rack on the back. Look, time to change. I'm, you know, I'm chilling, man. I'm 65, 70, you know, maybe a little more depending on where I need to go. But, you know, it's chill for me when I do deal with the police now. I don't, hey, I'm just on, done, and I don't tell them what I don't really don't tell them what I do at all. You know, normally I cooperate to see how they're going to react. You know, if there's something that I don't approve of, then and it's kind of leading to the rest. And you know, I know how to handle from there. You know, I know who to get in contact with. You know, you got to, you know, file formal complaints. You know, things like that. And that kind of leads into, you know, the second part of your question is, how do we handle it? I've talked to a lot of young guys, a whole lot, to tell them how to deal with law enforcement, you know, and I tell them, look, man, you have to do what they say right then, even if you don't agree with it, you know, because you're not winning that right then. I don't know y'all have heard that before. You're not winning that right there on the scene. Never. I'm sorry. You're not going to win. Okay, you can call for a supervisor or ask for a supervisor to come. A supervisor may come, you know, but chances are you're not going to win that. You know, you want to make sure, I tell people a little tip, you know, make sure their body cameras are on. You know, they should be on. They're, you know, in Durham, you know, we're mandated. We have to have our body cameras on. You know, make sure that's on. If you don't appreciate the way an officer, you know, spoke with you or however, or if you think he was doing something illegal or something, you know, that he shouldn't have been doing, you know, file a formal complaint. But I personally say, educate yourself, you know. I think that's the main thing. The more you know, if you know what you know, what officers can do or cannot do, you know, it will help you out in the long run. You know what I mean? You know, so many guys ask me, well, can they do it? I'm like, you know, and I tell them, but I'm like, hey, you got to educate yourself, man. That's how you stay from actually, you know, that's how you stay from not getting hurt or anything like that, you know. And they know the law. They know what they can and, you know, cannot do. And they just don't expect you to know, you know, the law. So, you know, and you know, of course, again, my main thing is, you know, you somebody's son or anybody, you want to go home, you know, your mama wants to see you again. So, yeah. You know what I mean? So the thing is to be respectful, you know, a lot of the, if you have an opinion, of course, you can say what you need to say. If you have a question, I'm not saying sit there and be quiet, don't say nothing, you know. Nah, you don't, you know, if, you know, say what you need to say, most definitely. But, you know, of course, doing it in a respectful way, you know. And if you think things are out of hand or doing wrong, you know, of course, ask for a supervisor, make sure his body camera's on again. And if you need, get names, badge numbers, if you need to. And you know, take that to the department. And depending on the department, you know, some places are different than others. You know, Durham, they're pretty strict with us. You know what I mean? So, you know, make that formal complaint. It might be justified, it may not, but that's where you get your ball rolling, most definitely.
Now, you know, I gotta play devil's advocate, man. I can't. Now, me and Drew, before I say what I'm gonna say, me and Drew always say, you know, we like our chances if we comply. Yes, sir, no, ma'am, da-da-da, we follow to the T. But that's still not a guarantee that you're gonna make it home. And I think that's the frustrating part. That's the thing that scares me to death. You talked about driving 65, 70. I do that because I'm older, right? And I got kids. I got the kid babysitting the back. But I also do that because I don't want to get pulled over, man. I don't want to, because I'm going to comply. And I'm telling all the listeners, I'm telling you, if something happened to me and I got pulled, you don't have to worry. I comply.
Trust me.
You know, because I have had that conversation with my uncles and father, and I'm just built that way. Like, I'm right here. And sometimes we still don't make it home. Yeah. And so, but I think what you're saying, articulating is what me and Drew said, but I like my chances more so if I am compliant than to say, hey, man, why you do that? Why you do that? Why you checking my that, and being all hysterical. But I had to say that though, because I don't want the listeners this thing, you know, cause that's the thing that people are going to say, well, I do all of that and still, you know what I mean?
Right. You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, it does happen. I can't sit here and say that, you know, it doesn't. Like you said, though, you have to, you know, give yourself more of an opportunity or a chance to, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying, you know, law enforcement is 100% right when they go in and pull people over and, you know, different things like that. It definitely happens, and there's definitely been some, of course, some wrongful, you know, deaths or shootings, you know, on law enforcement behalf. But, you know, I think, you know, like you said with Drew, how y'all spoke before, you know, your chances are a lot higher if it's done, a certain way, you know what I mean? And like I said, going back to the tips, something about where to put your license and registration. You know what I mean? And how you have to talk. Because even as a law enforcement officer, I say, sir, my registration is there. Do you mind if I grab it?
Right.
Go ahead. Then I do. You know what I mean? Like, really, and it's unfortunate we have to be that way, but I'm police and I still get scared. I be like, you know what I mean? And it's crazy. So, you know, I get it. So, like, or I tell people, hey, if you get pulled over, go ahead and put your license, your registration out. Put it on your dash, you know, right in front, you know. And I know if y'all have heard that before. And, my son's not old enough to drive yet, but those are certain things that, you know, because he sees the news, he watches movies, he sees all this stuff. So, and he asks questions, and I tell him, hey, this is what you need to do. You know, again, does it happen like that all the time? No. Are you going to have bad apples, police officers? Yes. You know, but again, that is for us one of the, you know, it's crazy how that works because you got two scared people at one time. Like, that's crazy.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us today, episode 21, Law and Order. Thank you for our special guest, Detective Brandon Riley from the Durham Police Department. And we look forward to, you know, having our next episode and, you know, for you all to listen. Take care.
Kate.
I'm Drew.
Y'all.